This is the Hip Hop African Podcast. They record them live in the Department of African Studies on the campus of Howard University in Washington, D.C.
Hi, welcome back to the Hip Hop African Podcast. We hope you are enjoying your new year. The first podcast of this year, we were speaking with Cape Town-based hip-hop scholar Quentin Williams. Today, we're also speaking with someone coming out of Cape Town. We're going to be talking to Nazlee Saif, who is a hip-hop and spoken word artist currently based in Cape Town, but originally from Durban, South Africa. So Nazlee came to Cape Town and attended the University of Cape Town, but has also been very active on the hip-hop and spoken word scene in both Durban as well as Cape Town. So this conversation looks at hip-hop as this cultural space within which one can engage in several different social issues, but also a space where one can deconstruct social taboos that continue to exist within hip-hop culture. So issues of queer identities, challenging heteronormativity within hip-hop culture has all been something that Nazlee Saif as an artist has been doing. So within this conversation, Nazlee Saif talks about race, gender, religion, sexuality, all within the expressions that Nazlee chooses, all within the ways in which Nazlee chooses to express art, spoken word, hip hop, music. We also talk quite a bit about Nazlee's role in the Roles Must Fall movement. So if you remember last year, we did a special episode in which Masay Romaru, who was also a student at the University of Cape Town, also active in the Roles Must Fall movement, had a conversation or dialogue with Black Lives Matter activist Malina Abdullah. And so Nazlee was also involved in that same movement. So Nazlee, as well as Masay, were both kind of major figureheads within the Roles Must Fall movement. Nazlee occupied Azania House and was one of the students that was really outspoken about dealing with kind of decolonizing education in South Africa, specifically at the University of Cape Town. So Nazlee was already a socially conscious artist before coming to UCT, but became really engaged in the movement and used art as a way to express what was going on in the movement. So South Africa has always been known as a country where music and protest go together. And so throughout the anti-apartheid movement, you have a history of songs that have come out in or came out in protest of apartheid. Well, Nazlee also decided to, you know, help come up with songs that reflected kind of contemporary issues, as well as participating in the use of anti-apartheid songs to apply to the Roles Must Fall movement. At the same time, the Roles Must Fall movement has also impacted Nazlee's own work, Nazlee's own art. So we talk a lot about that. I mean, it's a fairly short conversation, but we talk quite a bit about the Roles Must Fall movement, Nazlee being a queer artist, a queer Muslim artist, a queer identified Muslim, which in itself can be challenged when you throw in queer, Muslim, and an MC, and how these intersecting identities within hip hop have been challenging to patriarchy and misogyny that exists within hip-hop culture, all hip-hop culture, South Africa, the U.S., wherever hip-hop culture is, it is always hostile to queer voices. And so we talk quite a bit about that. We also kind of talk about the concept of intersectionality and this idea that many times these oppressions happen at those intersections. So it's not just that one is oppressed because one is Black, or one is oppressed because one is Muslim, or one is oppressed because one is queer, but often when those identities intersect, often that's where a lot of the oppression happens. So we also talk about being Black and colored and this idea of Black identities versus colored identities. And we talk quite a bit about Steve Biko and Black consciousness and some of the things that some people may find problematic about Steve Biko's Black consciousness, but also the way it was used or has been used to mobilize people. We also talk within the conversation, Nazlee uses the term hoteps and uses it in a pejorative term in a way that is critical of again, similar to hip-hop masculinity in hip-hop or misogyny in hip-hop or patriarchy in hip-hop, looking at many of the folks who are Pan-Africanists or consider themselves quote-unquote woke, and looking at how some elements within that community will cloak patriarchy in this kind of brand of Pan-Africanism. And so the term hoteps, I mean, there have been quite a people who've taken issue with that term being used in a negative way. But when you look at people like Umar Johnson and the like, who were often wave the flag of Pan-Africanism, but it's often disguising extreme homophobia, anti-feminism, and so in just kind of this really hyper-masculine brand of Pan-Africanism. So we have a small discussion about that, as well as looking at feminism itself. And so Nazlee has some very bold, very interesting ideas on all of these topics. And so I thought it would be, you know, great to bring that to the podcast and have a conversation about that. And I think it's one of the more revealing conversations that we've had with an artist on the show. And it definitely will generate discussion and debate, whether you agree with Nazlee or take issue with Nazlee. Definitely the fact that Nazlee Saif is confronting these issues and bringing these issues up within the platform of hip hop is definitely important. So Nazlee, like I said, Nazlee's presence within hip hop challenges hip hop's masculine heteronormative culture. And it also, Nazlee's presence also comes with a level of frustration, or expresses a level of frustration with Black consciousness, as well as Pan-Africanism, or some Pan-Africanism, or some aspects of Pan-Africanism, because there's not just one brand of Pan-Africanism. So very few scholars have looked at queer identities within hip-hop. So I wrote a piece called Gender Representations Among Tanzanian Female MCs back in 2014 in the book Hip Hop and Social Change in Africa. And that book looked at the ways in which, in some cases, female artists in Tanzania discussed or brought in sexuality, but in many ways it was within the subtext of the music. And so the way in which they addressed heteronormativity, the way in which they address or existed in hip hop, some hyper-masculine culture. Adam Haupt, however, who's a professor at the University of Cape Town, who was also involved with students in the Rose Must Fall movement, or has been involved with students, has done quite a bit more actually on looking at queer identities within hip hop. In 2016, he did the article Queering Hip Hop, Queering the City, Dope St. Jude's Transformative Politics. The names of all of this are in the show notes for this episode, so you'll be able to find it. And then on the US side, you have Marquita Smith's 2014 article called Or a Real, Real Bad Lesbian, Nicki Minaj and the Acknowledgement of Queer Desire in Hip Hop Culture. And so those references are there. But again, there has not been much written thus far on queer identities within hip hop, especially when you start talking about trans identities, which when we get into the episode to the interview, you'll hear from Nazlee in terms of how Nazlee identifies. So we're going to start off the show with playing a clip from Nazlee's recent song, The Wake Up Call. And we're going to actually end the interview in this particular episode with the rest of that song. So we're playing the first half of the song now, and then we're going to play the second half of it at the end of the episode. So while Nazlee has done a lot of performances, participated in a lot of open mics, a lot of hip hop events, in terms of being a recording artist, Nazlee's body of work is still kind of growing. Nazlee is I don't want to say a newer artist, but an artist that has a lot of music that has yet to really be released. But I think Nazlee's voice is an important voice within hip hop culture, and Nazlee's presence within Cape Town, especially within the activist community in Cape Town, is very, very important. So again, if you like the show, please get on iTunes and rate us, leave comments. The comments that people do leave, we tend to forward them to the artists themselves, to the people that we interview. If you have any questions, anything that you would like us to ask or forward or what have you to some of the artists that you will here on the show or some of the interviewees, please let us know. You can contact us at feedback@hiphopafrican.com. That's feedback@hiphopafrican.com. Thanks.
Yo, it's the evolution. In the world of confusion, we don't even need a revolution. Don't need to revolve. We need to evolve.
Evolve, evolve.
The way they use the dialect to make my intellect irrelevant. Dean's list that I could talk that academic shit. Said I keep spitting so my street niggas feel me. When they hear the truth, they make it sound like a conspiracy. This is from the ground, so I'm keeping it righteous. Radical rap, fuck if the radio like this. Telling about Islam, wondering if I'm with ISIS. The way they fear the truth, they burn Qurans with their lighters. Look outside, it's like the end of the times. I'm just trying to find my calm while I'm penning these rhymes. I'm an artist, understand the six in my mind. Why you always so angry? Can we chill just the time? My nigga, you chasing six figures, but ain't got no land. You should really think bigger, bigger. Y'all should have figured. All of my warrior queens pulling triggers. All they deception, they still couldn't trick us. If your third eye open, then you my witness. Lost our wings, walk with the feet.
Okay, so we're sitting here with Nazlee Saif. You're MC, spoken word artist, poet, and I wanted to find out how you got into the hip-hop scene, the poetry scene.
So I started off at Poetry Circles in Durban Central. We walked from venue to venue, wordsmiths of different genres, from rap to spoken word to graffiti would just come in, and freestyle, then cypher, and walk to another session. But it started a bit earlier when my mother listened to a lot of hip-hop and I started writing rhymes.
So your mother listened to hip-hop?
Yeah, she listened to a lot of hardcore rap, like N.W.A., Public Enemy, a lot of gangster rap, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And when did you leave Durban? How old were you when you left Durban?
I left Durban at the end of high school. I was trying to get away from home as soon as possible. I was about 18. Okay. As soon as I graduated high school, I tried to get into a college in Cape Town.
Okay. So you ended up at UCT?
Yeah, I ended up at UCT. I got an entrance scholarship and came here to study anthropology, gender studies, and literature.
Okay. And then got involved in Roads Must Fall. So how did that come about? How did your getting involved in Roads Must Fall happen?
I was very isolated when I first came to UCT because I didn't ever go to private schools. I went to public schools, and just the lack of resources that we had versus what I saw. And there was just a large disparity between class and race at this college. So I was part of the students that were experiencing UCT as a really colonial space and didn't know what to say about it until 2015, when people threw shit at the statue of a colonial person and we grouped together and occupied the administrative building of the school. Yeah.
Okay. And so then you, with your music, how did that relate to your art? Like, did you, were you able to use your art in the movement?
Yes. In the protest space that we were occupying, Azania House, that's what it was actually called. We were occupying Azania for about a month, 3 weeks, just over 3 weeks to a month.
Okay.
In that space, we formulated subcommittees, because when you're in that space for so long, you really have to do something with your time. I was part of the intersectionality audit subcommittee and the education subcommittee.
Okay.
There's another subcommittee where people gathered together to create music, and we discovered that in order to mobilize, art was very integral to the movement. Yeah, so beyond lecturers of ours coming in and doing screenings and talks, we would just have spare time afterwards and just get together in a circle and put a djembe on in the middle of drum. Freestyle. And then go out into the protests the next day and do some of the same things.
So I remember you said that you, because South Africa has a tradition of kind of music and protest going together.
Yes.
So there are all these protest songs. And so you talked about the importance of not only kind of having that legacy of protest songs, but also the importance of creating your own protest songs. So why was that so important?
Um, we had been singing a lot of protest songs from over the ages in South Africa, mm-hmm. repeating a lot of the very similar lyrics from the 70s as mm-hmm. well, because the struggles were so similar, especially mm-hmm. the student-related struggles, and some songs like Mama Wema, where you're literally crying to your mother, mm-hmm. Just saying, wow, mom, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was important to represent that, just to like mm-hmm. show how it's the same thing, but okay. also from a new age perspective, just interpreting it for ourselves and sharing what we thought as supposedly born free people in South Africa.
Okay, so you mentioned born free. What is born free for folks who may not know?
Okay, so outside of South Africa, South African narratives, they use Mandela's icon. Mm-hmm. I have nothing against Mandela, guys. When I throw shade at Mandela, I'm not throwing shade at this man. This old man is innocent. He didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. He was used as a puppet. But mm-hmm. I'm speaking about the Mandela icon. They mm-hmm. use him to tell everybody that, like, we have struggled. We have went through this racial violence. We, as your parents, have, like, fought so and chosen not to fight physically, mm-hmm. So that we can have peace and just be free and equal mm-hmm. and live together in this country. But being somebody that was born after that apartheid period, I was born mm-hmm. in 1995, the year after apartheid finished.
Okay.
Growing up my whole life, I still experienced, not what my parents experienced, but different kinds of violences. And I think people in this last protests, mm-hmm. the student-related protests, have brought into question what it means to be born free and if that's actually a thing in South Africa.
Okay. And so your music and whether it's the poetry or the rap, tends to be very political.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I don't think I've heard you do anything that's just kind of like, where's the party?
Hey.
Seems to be very, very political. So how would you describe kind of the content of music? What are some of the things that you feel like your music addresses?
So leaving the protest space, because I'm just not loyal to banners, or mm-hmm. I'm not loyal to people that are telling me, sing the song, let's mm-hmm. protest here. I'm loyal to the core of it. A lot of my music has brought my politics into it. So some concepts like decolonization, I'm always in Azania House when I'm in my bedroom studio. Whether or not I'm occupying a physical building, I'm occupying that mental state of, this is our land, it's been stolen for us, we need to get it back. That's a very core concept, decolonization. My gender and sexuality comes through in my music as well. Even if I'm writing a love song, it's political because my identity is political intrinsically. So queerness, decolonization, Afrofuturistic gangsterism is a core concept that I'm trying to figure out in my head still.
Okay.
To me, Afrofuturism is whatever someone of African descent imagines to be the future.
Okay.
Wildly, without boundaries, just whatever you imagine it to be.
Okay.
And gangsterism has a lot to do with, because I have actual gangsters in my family, just the attitudes of, you're not going to keep me away from getting what I want.
Okay.
But on a more higher intention of not trying to break down your community for that, but trying to use art as a form of going back at the violences, being like, okay, you can try to lock me up, but don't think that, like, you're just going to catch me for my gun. I have a camera and that's going to shoot you too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So how do you identify in terms of, because I know you, it seems like you talk about intersectionality.
Yeah.
And having multiple identities that are under assault.
Mm-hmm.
And so how would you define who you are?
Who am I? It's interesting because, like, now that you say it, like, in that language, I just want to say I'm Nazly Safe.
Okay.
But if you say, like, who I identify as, or then I have to use terminology so people don't get it twisted and say that I'm just a FMC or I'm just So in terms of political identities that I claim, I would say I'm trans, non-binary.
Okay.
Black, I'm colored. Mm-hmm. Both of them. Some people think they're incompatible, but blackness for me is in relation to my Khoikhoi ancestors and not the Steve Biko blackness as I used to believe in either.
Okay, so what's up with the Steve Biko blackness?
Steve Biko blackness, it can get twisted in a lot of different ways because people are like, all people that have been oppressed. So one, some white people will even use Biko against you and say, no, look at Biko, he's speaking about even me, a white woman who's been oppressed by white men, so can I not be black too? No, you can't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that that in terms of the Steve Biko blackness definition.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're also Muslim.
Yes, I am.
So all of these identities in one person.
Yes.
Is it sometimes... Is it sometimes difficult to be all of them, given that, like, for example, the Muslim identity may conflict with, or some people may see it conflicting with the queer identity?
Yes. It's such a balancing act inside of myself that actually, like, shows me to be off balance externally sometimes as well. So I use my music as a way to just vent that. Sometimes I'll write something that's incomplete or just doesn't seem to fit anywhere. And it also leads me to, like, expressing things I can't just express in the world, like explicit anger or an uncomfortability or just leaving spaces for silence. Yeah, it's difficult to exist at all as all of these things at one time, but I just know that I'm not falling apart right now. So say something about it being compatible.
Yeah. And so do you then have difficulties outside in terms of when you're in queer spaces, people accepting your religious identity, or when you're in Muslim spaces, people accepting your sexual identity?
I've actually done quite a bit of writing on this as a journalist. I've done research on Muslims and queer Muslims specifically. It can be seen as something that's in conflict, but the Quran actually has no verses that say you cannot be gay. And like anything, often interpretations are given by, like, most interpretations of the Quran are translated from very ancient Arabic into English by men into English, which is also a very small language to encapsulate anything spiritual. So I see no conflict in the scripture. Okay. It's just communities often. For example, living in Woodstock, that's a conservative Muslim community. Expressing queerness physically is something a community can shun you for. But in terms of the other way around, you asked me the queerness and the Muslim and the Muslim and the queer. With being queer and Muslim, the queer community seems to be more accepting of my Islam than the Muslim community is of my queerness.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it easier in Cape Town than it would be in other cities in South Africa?
I think Cape Town can be a complicated city in terms of navigating queerness because you think it's safer. Physically, there are more people that would identify as queer, but it's very dependent on class a lot of the time.
Okay.
So you can be queer as much as you want in Sea Point or V&A Waterfront, where it's dominantly white people or people that have a lot of money, high income people. But being queer in Woodstock or being queer in Mitchell's Plain or the townships in South Africa, it's not as easy to navigate.
Now, is there are there still a lot of incidents in terms of queer individuals being attacked? Because I know that in the past there have been a lot of stories of especially women who've been raped and killed.
Yeah, that's extreme, and it's something that you don't even hear in the news most of the time, depending on which queer person it is.
Okay.
So, yeah, in the townships, you would get a lot of lesbian murders, quote-unquote corrective rape, whatever that is.
Yeah,
it's very common, and people have to code switch, not only their blackness. You don't have to just have a double consciousness in how you navigate your race in Cape Town, but in terms of your queerness, you have to switch on and off as a queer person.
And so what about the criticism that folks may have about queerness being un-African?
I've studied quite a bit about this in university, and through everything I've read and heard, it doesn't say that queerness didn't exist. We just learned to name it as gay, lesbian, using language that we got from the West. But throughout the continent, throughout history, you get different engagements with homosexual behavior. Mm-hmm. For example, sometimes people wouldn't even necessarily be in a homosexual marriage, but there may be an initiation process between men where they fetch water mm-hmm. and they touch each other. Mm-hmm. And no one says, hey, you gays, mm-hmm. you must get excluded from our community. But they've mm-hmm. been doing such rituals and practices and experiences throughout the centuries.
Okay.
Yeah.
In terms of looking at your political views, your views in terms of your activism, in looking at the Roads Must Fall, and then we talked before about parallels with Black Lives Matter. Mm. How did that movement, Roads Must Fall, deal with sexism and the kind of gender hierarchy that sometimes is placed in those types of movements?
I think because there were so many people that were just aware and exhausted of patriarchy, they had used language to call it out explicitly, but that doesn't mean that these men also don't mobilize individually and plan like their own ways of dealing with the mad Black feminists. Yeah, there were a lot of parallels between Black Lives Matter and Roads Must Fall, just in terms of the way that a lot of these movements were formulated by a queer Black woman. And over the progression of the movement, these people just claim narratives and get people to mobilize beyond behind their own political agendas. So there were spaces in Roads Must Fall where people just decided this is... it got very messy because of cisgender people, because they would say this is a woman and non-binary space, or they would say it's a woman-only space until a non-binary person calls them in. So as much as we can talk about how we mobilize against or how we deal with patriarchy, there's also a lot of problems even within like us beyond the HOTEPs that are doing that. Like a lot of microaggressions do happen. So there were spaces where people were like, okay, none of the cis het men are going to chair this meeting, none of you are going to speak, as everybody else is going to speak first. But that didn't always work out because they always put their hands up and they take up a lot of space. So people have found ways of kind of dealing with it, but overall I still think that they were very loud, the men.
All right, so again, the term HOTEPs, could you define what you mean by the HOTEPs?
For me, a HOTEP is somebody who mobilizes behind the idea of being woke or conscientious, you know, spiritually attached to the idea of Africa, more specifically to the idea of Egypt and the idea of us being kings and queens, even if that's not the language they're using, just the pseudo woke thing that they use to cover up toxic masculinity or patriarchy. That's a whole tip.
Okay. All right. And so the idea that, you know, one of the... Definitely there's a debate in terms of the use of the word HOTEP. And those who may look to Kemet as kind of the foundation of their political ideology, who may feel like, okay, using HOTEPs in that way is like a negative connotation for anyone who subscribes to kind of the idea that Kemet is the foundation.
Yo, like, I can respect and give credit and humility to the fact that people may like resonate and identify with Kemet, and that's like valid as their own process. But like, if you're really Pan-African and you can understand that you're not the only Black person in the world, can another Black person not say HOTEP if they see something toxic in what you're doing? Since like, okay, this is the foundation as you see in your worldview, is it not the foundation of me also? Since we're both from Egypt, can I also not say HOTEP?
Okay. And could it be also the idea that a lot of the people who are kind of exuding this toxic masculinity are using the name of Kemet, or the name, or the ones that are also at the same time using the term HOTEP and using these phrases, kings and queens, and so that relationship.
I think I agree with what you're saying. A lot of the time they would take it so personally is because of this like exotic fantasy of Egypt mm-hmm. being a place where we were kings and queens.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really are so interested in Egypt, you must like look at it as some black people were exploiting other black people as mm-hmm. well. So they were, it had its mm-hmm. flaws in that. And I don't think that we must have, when looking at our history, look at all of our ancestors as gods, because mm-hmm. some of them messed up, and that's why we have a lot of the same problems we have now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about the criticism that you should put race first?
Yeah, I don't think you can just put your blackness first. Mm-hmm. You exist as so many intersections mm-hmm. as a human. And this conversation that Hoteps have mm-hmm. of how can you be so divisive to mm-hmm. say that? How can you say Hotep because that's dividing the black community?
Mm-hmm.
You can't say put your blackness first because you as a black man can oppress somebody on other identities like mm-hmm. gender or sexuality mm-hmm. or class. You don't even have to be a black man. You could literally just be somebody that's rich and black.
Mm-hmm.
And then you oppress someone else that's not able-bodied.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. yeah. There's a lot of identities that tie us together. And it's so important just because of how scattered and how big a mission colonization mm-hmm. was and how much white people invested into dividing us that we hold fast. But also, we can't be people that in order to get together, we are afraid to be critical mm-hmm. of ourselves and each other.
Okay. And so for you, your identities kind of are all intersecting and mm. that informs your activism mm. as well.
Yeah.
So the same, I guess it would be the same response in terms of feminists,
mm-hmm.
whether, so you have kind of the broader feminist term
mm-hmm.
where it's pretty much dominated by Western feminists, white mm-hmm. feminists. And so that movement has been very hostile to women of color.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of looking at black feminism or African feminism,
mm-hmm.
what is your views on that?
Mm-hmm. Feminism is messy. It's still something I'm trying to work out in my own head. Mm-hmm. And like I can get reclamation, I understand why people do it. So people would move away from feminism and say, no, we're not like white feminists. It's not mm-hmm. that those waves of feminism is something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even have to call it feminism. We've been feminists for all these centuries.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets more complicated for me as somebody that's trans, non-binary, and was born, I won't even mention what body, let's see if I'll confuse people at another mm-hmm. stage in life. It gets messy when people can sometimes see it as woman-based or like equality being about both sexes, because it's way more than that. There's way more than two genders, first of all.
Okay.
So I don't know how I feel about feminism yet.
Okay. I never thought about that, because I know in discussions with African feminists, activists, and scholars, there's this idea that there's been this conversation of whether or not men can be feminists.
Yes.
And I think most serious scholars and activists mm. will say no, mm-hmm. men cannot be feminists.
Mm-hmm.
But then the idea that feminism also looks at it like there are only two genders
mm.
is something that, till like literally you just said it, I had never
mm-hmm.
considered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. So can a non-binary person be a feminist if a man can't be one?
Wow. That's a good. Yeah. I had never. Again, it's like every time it seems like we interact, it's like I'm learning different stuff. That first time I was coming to South Africa and talked about coming here to talk to female MCs mm. and I had put it on Facebook and I think someone tagged you in it, and then mm-hmm. you sent me a message that was critical of my use of the term female MCs or femcs. And mm-hmm. again, not kind of having even thought or considered anything, mm-hmm. you know, any other kind of structures or frameworks.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my first reaction was, who is this person sending me this message? But then the next was, I must meet this person mm-hmm. because you need to, whether you're an academic or activist or artist or whatever, need to understand as many different perspectives
mm-hmm.
and voices as possible.
Mm-hmm.
because you don't, you know, if someone leaves out black voices, I'm going to be like, well, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of learning that, it's, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely a learning experience. Mm-hmm. having conversations with you, and it's great. And so your music, what's kind of draws you more towards when you sit down and you either are performing or writing determines whether or not you're going to use poetry or hip hop to get your voice out?
I think the creative process for me has always been something I can't call upon when I want to. Sometimes I'll be doing something else and I'll be very preoccupied or maybe very urgent for me to do some administrative thing, and this line will be stuck in my head and I have to write it down, else it's going to be lost. So in the same way, I can't choose whether it's rap or it's going to be poetry. Sometimes I'll really try to write it up first, but it'll only really happen if I'm freestyling and recording and transcribing later on. Other times I would want to write rap because I have a beat that I want to write on, but poetry is only coming out and it has to be written this time. So I guess it's just been a process of learning how to go with my instinct when something comes upon me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so right now you're working on which projects?
At this point, I'm working on an audio visual slash a visual album. I did my first release, a visual called The Wake Up Call, in collaboration with Anunnaka. From Imagery is Infinite. She's from Portland, but came through from Los Angeles and created it with me, songs that I had for a while. And since then, I've just been thinking visually in terms of how I write as well. And it is a project that's based on Afrofuturistic gangsterism as a theme, and using art as a form of radical resistance. And yeah, it's going to just be a sound story through different forms of my art, from including some images that I take on my 35mm camera to multimedia flashes, green grabs, poetry, rap. Yeah, just a mixture, just an amalgamation.
So you mentioned, you said that this was kind of your first release. That was your first release. But you've been doing this for a very long time.
Yeah.
So how is this one just your first release? Because you've been doing this for several years now.
I've been doing it for several years. But at other points in my life, I never had access to my own like studio setup or the money to do that sort of thing. I had saved. I'd worked part-time, but my mother wasn't really encouraging me to do it. She actually stopped me at some point. She called the studio that I had set up an appointment with, and she's like, no, this is just to call you to cancel. It's not going to happen. to buy a mic, said they also weren't happy for that. Took a step back and just started performing and creating a lot.
Okay.
And then I recorded with some men who were very power hungry and wanted a push to their own agendas and wanted me to have specific hooks or be like, this is not a song until it has this and this and this. And I just don't like my art being in someone else's hands like that. I love collaboration, but you're not going to be a writer for me right now. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so now you feel you're at a space where you're able to produce.
Yeah. I just got a bedroom studio set up finally. And I'm just looking forward to playing around. Also just messing up this idea that everything needs to be Beyonce quality. Like, I am from South Africa. You're probably going to hear some background noise here and there, but I just want it to sound real.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so then you'll be releasing things on your, which social media site do you use the most?
I've been using Instagram a lot. Right now, I made my profile private because I like to take a step back from people. So you might follow me and not get a chance if you don't do it quick.
Okay.
I use Instagram a lot, and I'm going to be releasing my visual on YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a YouTube channel?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I have a YouTube channel. You can follow me, Nazli Arbi.
Okay.
Yeah.
On YouTube.
Yeah, okay. YouTube.
All right. And so your music, the things that you're kind of focusing on now, what are some of the issues now that you feel are just kind of inspiring you to write about?
At this point, I have a little bit of a wet dream of an art drive-by shooting. So I just want to get a gang of people with cameras and just do like a drive-by through Cape Town and like have our music playing in the background while we do it. So I think what's been driving me is just like, I've just been letting my mind just like run free into like imagination.
Okay.
It's really difficult, and it's something that I've had to teach myself how to do as a person of color, to imagine. Like, you don't have much time to do that when you have to focus on things like paying rent and everything else, but it's like a real mental task to tell yourself, like, take a little time to like just imagine anything can happen. So I've just been, what's been driving me is listening to my friends' imaginations as well. I've just been like doing a mental test with them, just saying like, just let's, we're sitting here for 20 minutes, like, can you imagine what your life would be like if. And playing like they did in Paris is Burning, like with the balls, where they just decide that they are going to be in executive realness and they don't have the money to do it, but they're going to dress up and they're going to be a businessman right now. So creating that with our art on a low budget is something that's been inspiring, looking at how other people can just use like software they download on the internet, like a real quick app, and not forcing it to be realistic, but just so you get the idea that we're doing it.
And so then your school, you went to, you got, you said your degree was in
I did gender studies, anthropology and literature.
Okay, so how will that tie into your music? Or will you use it? I guess the question I'm asking is it going to be kind of having two parallel running careers, or is it at some point the goal to use what you've done in school to kind of inform this full-time music career?
I guess right now I'm using the degree to sort of fund rap, so I can imagine.
Okay.
So although I'm a rapper in my head, I have to be a journalist to pay the bills so I can have those imagination sessions. So my social anthropology, gender studies, and literature just comes through in me asking questions to my community and also building stories from these connections I'd build as a journalist, and also just building a community through this degree.
Okay.
More than directly influencing my rap. I guess it also just influenced me through introducing me and getting me into the habit of reading or seeking out literature that influences the rap.
Okay. And now, kind of finally, you did a lot of work with Rose Must Fall and Fees Must Fall. And so the question is, that movement, it's not necessarily over, but where do things stand now in terms of that movement, the Fees Must Fall, Rose Must Fall movement?
I think a lot of people are really exhausted, and a lot of people have spent a lot of money and time and energy just fighting and being brutalized. We had a black woman arrested again this past year. She was doing a performance art piece. And had to leave the country shortly afterwards, after she just got out on bail. So there are people that are doing groundwork, but people are not there in masses before. The media has also strategized with the government to not give things quote-unquote hype, but actually just telling people what's happening. I think that people have been mobilizing in a lot of ways that are not physical. I think people have been writing about it, like in theory. I've been writing about it in art. I know that visual artists have been creating things. And it's also just given us a lot of networks.
Okay.
But I don't think that at this point that there are that many physical gatherings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so you talked about what's next for you in terms of your project. But what are your goals? Kind of this is, I guess, the last question. Your long-term goals of where you see things going with your music?
I really want to travel. I want to build a community of people of color, queer, trans people specifically. And I think that Huh. A friend of mine, Nema, who is mm-hmm. from Kenya, has been living in the US and South Africa and everywhere, mm. has been talking about this movement called Back to Africa, and I can understand why mm-hmm. people of the diasporas find like a need to build community. Mm. So ultimately, me traveling is in the search of community
okay.
in the diasporas, and also to try to build networks for people that are creating mm-hmm. whatever they're creating, to just be able to hold each other in each other's homes on a yeah. more real level than just building an industry that is a travel network.
Yeah.
That it could get to that level, but on a ground level of being like, okay, you are really trying to get away from the violence that you're facing. This is a space that I have.
Mm.
Can I get away from my community sometime too on that level? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Building, I don't believe in safe spaces, but like places of like less violence. I think that's a mission I'm on.
Okay. All right. Nice. All right. Is there anything else that we kind of didn't touch on that you...
Nah, I don't think there's anything so specific. I just want people to know that the land is theirs and like you don't have to apologize for any of your identities. Mm. And also you owe nobody explanations for your identity. So if you're somebody who has to balance or code switch or in order to stay surviving, you have to not be queer in front of your family.
Mm.
Like you owe nobody an explanation. You are who you are and the land is yours.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Yeah.
If you fucking with the 90s. Check it out. Hey, check it out. They say that sex sells, they fuck with our minds to get change. Focused on getting head decapitated slaves. Majority don't even know what's going on, and we don't even recognize the lack of knowledge so long. But it don't matter, we're just atoms and protons. And search for heaven's gate when the blunt's out and smoke's gone. And my city only dreams, we have a wet one. Not what you thinking, I'm talking tears and regrets, son. They trying to get something, hoping that they get some. The system got us fucked already, so don't you stress, son. But which position would you like to pick? They play like Tom and Jerry, missions we failed already. Older brothers refused to slave, is all jailed. The rest got their minds in cage, but oh well. Indoctrination and GMOs is our main focus, still pimps and hoes. It's global depopulation from WHO, but we want shoes so expensive, we gotta sell souls. I could never do a 9-to-5. Military boots, fucking suits and ties. And when I think about it, I don't suit the ties. Unstrap from the doctrine, remove your mind. From the doctrine, remove your mind. Strap from the doctrine, remove your mind. Cause I'll leave you high, safe like the police. I don't wanna fight, I just wanna blow trees. Living in a world where there's never no peace, never no peace. Damn.